Howdy and welcome to River Talk, a podcast hosted by Priscilla Macy, Zach Collier, and me, Eric Weissett. We've been gone for a little while, but we're back at the end of the summer and life's slowing down, so we're going to get back into podcasting. To start this season off, we're going to talk about beatering, and we're going to talk about a topic that's been floating around, life jackets or no life jackets when you're river surfing. But before we start with those main topics, we usually hit some news of the week or news of the season in this case. Zach, Priscilla, do you have anything you want to talk about?
I think Featherfest is coming up. I think that's a big one here in a couple weeks. Are you guys thinking about going?
Yeah, definitely. Hoping that work schedules line up so that we can head down there on Thursday. But right now is the plan. The plan is to get down there.
Cool.
And it's the last weekend of September.
That's awesome. I am not planning on going. I am in like catch up on my life mode right now after the end of the summer. I've got a lot of firewood to cut, you know.
So. Idaho stuff.
Yeah. Get your snowmobile tuned up.
Yeah, that's actually the other project I've got.
Jack your truck up 6 inches, normal.
I'm putting it off at least a couple of weeks, although I was looking at bumpers yesterday.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome.
Yeah. Priscilla, have you been before to Featherfest?
Yeah. I've only been once before. When was that? I don't know, maybe 4 years ago. Uh-huh. It was really fun. Camping is kind of a pain. It's in a small area. So if you don't get there early, you don't get a spot. And then you kind of have to go to disperse spots away from the event, which isn't so bad. But the event itself was really fun. They had some clinics. They had a class 3 race, like a shorter race above the actual section. Then they have their class 5 race on the Tobin section. And then the Loban section is just like really fun. Usually lots of people do that. And then the South Branch Feather is also somewhat close by. So you can run that as well. It's like, there's a section called Gnarl, like the Gnarl Fest section, which is the kind of grassroots unofficial race. And then there's a section that's below that section. So altogether, it's a pretty neat addition if you have the time to do both of those, I hear.
Huh. Cool. I'm sort of thinking about going maybe. It's just a lot of driving. And
yeah.
I'm not dying to be around a bunch of boaters that are drinking a ton. I don't know if I'm just getting old or it just seems like these festivals turn into just like a ton of drinking and being obnoxious.
Yeah.
Can I go down there and avoid that, or is that part of it?
You can definitely avoid it. When we went, they did like a film fest or whatever the night before, and it was like pretty much all the proceeds went to American Whitewater and the event. And then Jacob and I weren't really wanting to stay around for the party part of it, so we just ended up going to our camp and hanging out. And I think a lot of people do that because you can camp away from the party, like you wouldn't even hear it, and just kind of have your own hangout or whatnot if you want to. So it's not like the creaking competition where it's just the whole place is like that. It's very easy to get away from it. And during the day, most people are just boating the whole day. So, yeah, from what I remember, I thought it was pretty easy to do your own thing if you wanted to, or to hang out with people if you wanted to as well.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Zach, any other news, or Priscilla?
For me, the most recent news at the top of my mind right now is the recent rollback of the Clean Water Act. And without getting into it too much, the rule that they're rolling back broadened the definition of waters of the United States, which allowed the regulation of pollutants in waterways that were not necessarily connected to navigable waterways or navigable rivers, which is really important because if any of you know, in our previous discussions about navigability, there's very few rivers that have undergone that designation. And so if you're rolling back this regulation, it basically allows a lot more pollutants to enter a lot of the places that we enjoy in terms of paddling and having clean water quality and everything that we care about in a lot of these special places. So it's kind of a big deal. And I'm not necessarily sure what there is that boaters can do at this point, but I know like American Whitewater and Outdoor Alliance and other groups like that are trying to figure out ways to communicate the importance of clean water to outdoor recreation, among other things.
That just stresses me out. I don't even know what basically everything you just said, I don't even really understand it. So hopefully they have, like, it'd be great to have like a for dummies version of this.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe I'll work on that for the next episode.
Yeah. I think that'd be great. Rogue Riverkeeper just sent out an email yesterday or day before that did a pretty good job, I think, of laying out how it can specifically impact the Rogue.
Nice.
That was really great. So, you know, if you don't follow Rogue Riverkeeper, I would recommend that. I'd try and like summarize it, but I would butcher it. So I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. And I just was talking about this last night with some friends. So it was at the top of my mind and I didn't do much research before recording. So that'll be my homework.
That's awesome. You know, as it is, I think our first pod in quite a while since the summer has been happening. Either of you get in some super cool, unique trip or adventure?
Let's see.
Really, that question's going to be for Priscilla.
Priscilla did a lot of cool stuff. let me just go first. I did nothing beyond work. I only worked all summer since the last podcast.
Outfitting companies.
I probably went hiking a few times and went on a bike ride or two, but man, I missed fun adventures. So I'd love to hear what you're up to, Priscilla.
I wasn't really working a lot this summer, so I did a lot of trips and did two California trips, one in the kind of Yuba area, and then I got to do Mill Creek the multi-day some kind of near Chico, and then on another trip got to do the upper South Fork Tuolumne, which was really awesome adventure type run.
Is that
got
the
to
one
go
that
to,
goes from a bridge to a bridge?
It's above the bridge section.
It's like in between two bridges and you end at Rainbow Falls?
No. So this is above all that.
Wow.
It's above the put in for the Rainbow Falls stretch. Okay. Yeah. And it's more kind of classic Sierras, giant slides, bedrock, really steep. But
wow.
Most of the portages, you're kind of just walking on granite and, which is awesome. You don't get to do that in Oregon or Idaho, in a lot of Idaho, North Idaho, you're able to do that for some runs. And then we went to BC and kind of just did the classics there. And let's see, been doing a lot of mountain biking this summer, which has been awesome. And
Priscilla, what are the classics in BC? I've never paddled there other than like up far north.
So
what do you do when you go to BC and paddle?
I suppose what I consider the classics, which just this is from an Oregonian going to BC, is you have like the Triple Crown. You have the Callahan, Sioux, and Chequemus. We didn't do Callahan, just it was really low, and kind of the group wanted to do laps on the Chequemus and the Sioux instead. And then I would add to that the Ashloo being kind of the class five classic there, which we didn't do on this trip, but I would consider those the classics.
Are those day trips or overnight trips?
All of those are day trips.
Okay.
And though you could turn the Chequemus into a multi-day, I think, if you wanted to, because you can start at the Put-In Falls, which most people have probably seen pictures of, where it splits around a rock, and you can go all the way through to Daisy Lake, which is combining like three sections. So if you wanted to take your time, you probably could add in a camping spot there somewhere. But the Sioux is, we did a couple laps in one day, so pretty short run. And the Callahan is a really short run as well. And then the Ashloo, the mine section, and then there is the mini mine section, and then there is the Box Canyon section, which more people are probably familiar with, and each one of those are single day trips as well.
So you just go up there and like car camp and just pick from random places to paddle?
Yeah. For us, it's usually on a holiday weekend where water levels aren't always ideal, but we don't really care. It's just fun to go and paddle. So we just look at what water levels are and kind of follow where that is and do multiple apps or go explore something new. So
when's the best time to go up there?
Oh, that's a good question. I think probably earlier than Labor Day weekend, it seems like. Though they do have the Chequemus race, which is, if anyone's seen pictures of all the yoga balls in a river, like tons of colorful balls and people racing down a river.
That sounds awesome. Wait, explain this better.
Yeah, so how I understand it is everyone gets into a team, I think, of three or maybe more, and you each have a yoga ball that you're in charge of getting down the river, like before other people. And so they run this class four plus section of Whitewater. And as a team, you have to get your ball down. So you're not like attacking other paddlers necessarily. Yeah. You're like trying not to flip over in holes and trying to get your ball like out of eddies and whatnot. And just like the whole river is full of kayakers and these multicolored yoga balls. And I'm sure you have pictures of it, but it's really cool. It's like, it's supposed to be just kind of like a fun team event versus just uber competitive. So that happens on Labor Day weekend, like the week before. So that would be a reason to go during Labor Day weekend to experience that event. But I think people typically go a little bit earlier than Labor Day just because water levels are maybe a little bit better for, like, say, Callahan or whatnot. But if you're not picky and like us in Oregon or wherever and you haven't had water all summer, it doesn't really matter if stuff is a little bit low as long as you're able to paddle.
Yeah. I love that idea of that race. I feel like there should be more fun races out there, not just like who's the fastest to get down the river.
Yeah, I agree. And I like the team component. I think that makes it really fun.
I've always had this idea for a race where you get a bunch of beach balls and you throw in like 50 beach balls into the river. And then a team consists of a raft and two kayakers. And as a team, you have to collect the most beach balls. And whoever has the most beach balls at the end wins. So it involves like kayaking and rafting and teamwork. And I mean, throwing in 50 beach balls might include littering somehow, but I feel like,
you got to have like somewhere to collect them somehow.
I would love to see more races like that. It's just fun. Like, you know, who's the best at catching difficult eddies and working together. I think I'd love to see more races like that.
Yeah.
I think that sounds super fun. I like the creative races, you know, like when the King of the Rogue race came up. Remember the first time we looked at that course, I was like, this is ridiculous. you paddle back up and part of the race is carrying your boats up over the rocks to do different things. But at the end of the day, that was also kind of what made it really cool and unique. It was that it was just something, at least, you know, it was still like a race, but there was something different to it that was cool.
Hey, speaking of the King of the Rogue, I know Covey got hurt. So do you know who is the King of the Rogue now? I missed all that.
Yeah. I feel like I didn't see a lot of posts about it.
Yeah, but it
was a time of year when I wasn't paying attention to basically anything. So,
yeah, if anybody out there knows who it was, send us an email or a tweet or a fax. I'd love to know who the new king is and queen.
You know, now that we're talking about emails, it's entirely possible that there's 20 emails in our email account that tell us that information that I haven't looked at in 3 months. So, before the next pod, now that I'm thinking about it, I'll check the email.
Don't admit to that. People will stop emailing us.
No, email us. I check it all the time. Okay, I haven't gotten back to you.
Just not in the summer. Because,
you know, I don't have the internet. I don't know. yeah. Well, cool. That sounds like a fun summer, Priscilla. I'm jealous of going on adventures. That sounds cool.
Eric, did you do anything cool this summer?
I worked a lot, which was fun. I got to go on, a couple of commercial trips, which was great, with some really fun people and do some fun stuff. And early on in the season, I got to do more days on the river doing like guide training than I've done in the past, number of years, which is really fun. And some of those involved doing day trips on the Riggins Day Stretch of the Salmon at like 60 grand, which is super fun. Getting to drop rafts into holes, like some of the biggest holes I've ever put a raft into. That kind of stuff was fun. And so that was, I had a really good time early on being on the river quite a bit actually in June. So that was great. Getting to run high water stuff is always a lot of fun.
60,000. That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the year, but we capped out, didn't get that high this year. I think capped out at like 66 or 68 or something like that. Whereas the year before we capped out at like 91, but You know, a lot of major rapids on the rig and stretch, you know, people generally feel that 60 is when they're about the hardest. Maybe not the waves are the biggest, but it's kind of the most technical and the meatiest and everything else. And so it was fun to get to spend some time out at those levels and get to really see what that's like, because I hadn't spent a lot of time out there at those river levels. Yeah. So that was neat. And it's super fun. Like, that section at those levels is just really fun. But yeah. Other than that, it's been, you know, day trips here and there. Got to do lower salmon. Got to do, yeah, no, did some lower salmons. About it, really, actually. Now that I'm reflecting on it, it's kind of sad.
Oh, jeez. I'm sorry I asked.
No, I got some really fun family trips in, though, too, which was really cool. Fun. It's always fun to take the kids out, even if it was like a, you know, one night, 2 day kind of a thing.
Yeah.
My kids are getting to that age where taking them on the river is just absolutely awesome. Like, I it's bet. Just a magical place for them. So that's been really fun. And Rowan's starting to, you know, at nine, he's starting to be able to row the dory through like small whitewater. And he's gotten super into inflatable kayaking. Like, he's doing a decent amount of, I got him in the spud, and he's kayaking the spud all over the place and having a ton of fun with that. And
awesome.
So that's been really cool. Yeah. All right, so we get to our main topics of the day. So our first topic was beatering. Priscilla, I think you put that on there. I'm not, you know, I'm sure you had a reason, so why don't you dive into it?
Well, there's just been a lot of chitter chatter about it on the internet, about I think it originated from Hammer Factor bringing it up and a few other ongoing conversations throughout the years about whether our sport is glorifying people messing up and swimming, and not necessarily educating folks about the consequences of going into the sport in a really fast way and just kind of faking it until you make it in certain scenarios, and delineating between, you know, messing up in smaller rapids and safer rapids and messing up in hard white water, and just how our community might need to be a little bit better about educating the general public and newcomers to the sport about what the best ways are to progress. So I thought it might be interesting to hear both of your perspectives on that. And
Priscilla, do you mean, when you say the internet was talking about it, do you specifically mean Facebook, or is there somewhere else I'm missing where I'm missing this discussion?
Sorry, the Facebook. The okay. Facebook machine. There's been a few conversations about it that I've seen pop up with lots and lots of comments, all varying opinions. So it just seems
all like... of this. Where are these conversations? Is there some secret group?
This no.
Is happening? Okay.
I'll try to find the post and I'll share it with you.
Okay. Yeah, I'll say a couple things. The idea of beatering being glorified irritates me. Like, every time I talk to somebody who just swam a bunch and they're proud of it and say they beat her down the river, like a badge of honor, it really frustrates me, because it's not what we should be doing. We should be having clean lines and promoting good river running, not promoting making mistakes. So that's basically my two cents.
Yeah, I would generally, I think, agree with you, Zach. We've talked about this some before, but I got to thinking about back when I started boating, you know, 15, 18 years ago, whatever that was, like hard shell boating, it seemed like if you swam a lot, people just stopped boating with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they told you to boat easier stuff. But like, people weren't, over time, there's been this sort of, it feels like there's been a development where this acceptance that like swimming is part of kayaking has just, it's grown a ton to be this kind of thing that happens and it's acceptable. And my memory and my feeling as a younger boater was like, that was not the atmosphere that I was in.
I agree.
And I'm not sure what's changed or why. You know, I think in some ways, like the Jerry of the Day and some of those, like,
yeah,
those kind of things that glorify getting your butt whooped. Which, don't get me wrong, like, I enjoy a good Jerry of the Day. Like, to
what's,
laugh at is
fun. I don't even know what that is. What's Jerry of the Day? I feel like I'm being old.
It's an Instagram feed. You should be following on Instagram. It's pretty funny.
I'm missing so many cool things because I'm not tech savvy anymore. I'm gonna get Instagram right now. Is it Jerry with a J?
Back to Zach being old again.
Yeah, this is frustrating. No, I thought I was hip. I guess not. Anyway, what's is it Jerry with a G or a J?
J.
How do you spell it?
J-E-R-R-Y.
Of. Oh, there we go. Okay, got it. All right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But so, you know, and there's a number of those out there, right? Like, that's just one example of what's a dozen Instagram feeds that all do sort of the same thing. And, you know, it was happening before that. I think, you know, with the kind of universal acceptance of the booty beer and all of that, it just sort of, there's become this acceptance of swimming being part of kayaking. And it is when you're new and young and like learning, a young boater, not like a young person, but like young to being a kayaker, swimming is part of it. But that should be happening on like class 2 and 3 stuff.
Right.
And yeah. You should be developing the skills to not do that on that stuff. And then moving up as you build the skills to run other things.
Yeah. And I think something that's maybe more latent about the conversation that I've become maybe more perturbed about is in a number of video edits and photos that are shared on social media. I feel like people, when they do mess up, they often cut it out of the story. Like, they'll only show the photo of them before they swam or had something scary happen, or they'll only show the footage of them running the drop up to the point where they swam out of their boat, and not really address, you know, and particularly kayakers that are in positions of influence won't necessarily discuss like, oh, I really messed that up and it was super scary. Here's the story behind it, and here's how it could have been prevented, or this is just, you know, I was doing this thing that was progressing myself or the sport in a certain way, and this was a risk that I took knowing, and like, this is how our team prepared for it. Like, this is how we set safety. I feel like there's not really the cool factor about sharing that part of kayaking with the community. And the cool factor is like, oh, they messed up. Look at them beat her. Like what we were just talking about, like, let's show the footage of the booty beer versus showing the footage of like, you know, your four buddies that had to clean up your gear and you gasping for air when you came out of this giant hole. Like, we're kind of just like cutting that out of the narrative of kayaking. And I think if that was highlighted more, people would maybe understand the consequences and what goes into actually setting safety and taking a swim more.
Isn't this two different things though? I think you're talking to maybe about like high level boaters. You're saying they're not showing their mistakes. Versus,
well, they're not. Yeah, exactly. Like, they're then showing like beater reels, like in a glorified way, but they're not. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying this for everyone, but generalization, of course, they're showing their swims and beatering in a glorified way where they're not showing like what actually happened in terms of like, we were all super scared and this really sucked. You know what I'm saying? So it's like what's present in media is kind of the glorified version of the story and the aftermath of beatering a lot of the time, versus saying, no, this really sucked. This was horrible and I never want to do it again. I'm doing a booty beer because that's what we do, not because it's cool, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's just hard. Like, when you make a mistake, you don't want to share the world like, hey, I messed up.
But then I think people want to make like cool edits about their mistakes. I think that's like where there's a problem. It's like people don't want to talk honestly about their mistakes because it's hard and it like admits that they maybe did something wrong or did something that put their team in a position where they had to look out for him or her. Where like they're happy to show the funny clips that end up being a good edit to show.
Is this beatering thing more of like a what's on video thing, or is it more an attitude that's persuasive among boaters?
Or, I think it's both.
Because what I get frustrated, I don't see this much on the video myself. I'm probably not watching the video of this of these things, but it's more like seeing somebody take out, and they're like, man, I just beat her down that river. Like, that attitude bothers me. I wish people would be like, man, I had a rough day. I need to go practice more on class 2, you know, instead of this pride of like, oh yeah, I went out to do the North Fork of the Payette and I beat her my way down as like a badge of honor, you know? And so I think that, and it's hard to, when you're in person, say, dude, come on, really? Like, you're proud of beatering? That when you're listening to the story, I just kind of keep my mouth quiet, but sometimes I want to be like, man, you shouldn't be doing that. And it's hard to be that, you know, responsible person given that feedback at the moment.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like, this is my personal experience with it, is it's kind of an insecurity. It's like, you don't want to tell your friends or people you're boating with, like, man, I really messed up. I should probably not kayak hard whitewater for a while. It's like, I'd rather be like, oh man, I beatered. Ha ha ha. Like, I feel really bad, but I don't want to be honest about it. And I think that's part of the problem, is we feel awkward and icky about admitting that maybe we need to not be paddling hard whitewater and get back to the basics. So we just use this word that describes it and kind of covers up what really happened. I think at least that's how I feel like when I used to do that.
I agree with you 100%. I think it's just an insecurity in not wanting to admit to your friends that your skills aren't up to their level.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a kayaking thing, a rafting thing, or both?
I think it's all. Like, I think creature crafts, rafts, kayaks.
Do creature crafts really beater? I mean, isn't...
Let's not go to creature crafting.
Yeah. Crafting by definition just beatering.
Without getting too much into it, think about the videos that get the most traction. It's usually them stuck in a hole, which I would consider beatering, versus them doing something like impressive. So I would consider the glory or the glorified aspects of beatering in a creature craft to be more popular with audiences just from the outside. Just like I would say with rafting, like, we love watching rafting carnage. But like, we don't often like love hearing about the bad part of rafting carnage sometimes.
Or being on a trip where there is a bunch of rafting carnage. Like, no one likes to be on a trip when you're having to pick up, you know, somebody's flipped raft or unwrapped something, or, you know, you've got your friend who's getting stuck every third rapid because they're bouncing off every rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think
I take that. If you're on, like, you know, the Rogue Day Stretch, then that's fine. If you're out on the Illinois, it's a different story.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's like, I think the thing that people don't want to admit to themselves about beatering, again, because it feels icky, is you have to consider, like, what, like, the weight that you're putting on other people in the group, whether, like, they've, you know, chosen to be in your group, or they just happen to be on the river with you and, like, have to clean up your stuff or deal with a scary scenario where you're stuck in a bad spot on the river, or, you know, help flip your gear raft over just because they're not going to leave you on the river by yourself, you know. And so I think people need to be better at admitting to themselves that they've put other people, sometimes unwillingly, into not ideal scenarios by beatering in certain scenarios. Of course, it's a totally different conversation when you're learning how to kayak and everyone in the group knows that and they're willing to support that learning curve. And, you know, you're paddling easier whitewater, practicing your roles, and the people know, like, there's a likelihood of you swimming or messing up, and they're happy to help you move forward in that progress. But it's totally different when you're in over your head and you're just running something because of ego and pride, and then you expect your group to help you clean up the mess afterwards.
I think it would be interesting to see boating go through, you know, if you follow, like, avalanche stuff very much, you know, in the last 5, 6, 7 years, there's been a huge development of kind of this conversation around the heuristics of group decision making and avalanche awareness, and how, you know, people, if they're in a group of two, the same people will often make different decisions than if those same people are in a group of 5 or 6. And how that group dynamic plays into it. The people that are all incredibly skilled avalanche awareness kind of folks, incredibly skilled backcountry skiers, will make choices based on, you know, the emotions of a group dynamic and have group think in ways that they won't when they're in small groups or individuals. Mm-hmm. And I think that plays into boating too. And it's just not like the avalanche community is having that conversation and the boating community is not. You know, that, like, if you're with your one friend, the likelihood that you'll walk around a rapid is way, like, way higher than if you're with your group of, like, 6 friends. Mm-hmm. And there's pieces that play into that, like, there's more people to rescue and everything else. But if you were just to, like, evaluate your own skill set, the likelihood that you walk around with a small group, just because that pride piece, that group, like, pressure piece, you don't be the only person out of your group of 5 that walks around.
but to be one out of two of you that walks around is no big deal. You know, I think there's a lot of room for sort of research and thought leadership in that area around voting that doesn't exist currently.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is a nice time to turn the conversation to that almost. Like, who are those thought leaders? Right. We don't, I think, I'm guessing in the Avalanche world, there's some sort of Avalanche Association of America or something. But in, for paddling, who are the people who would sit down and talk about these things or set standards or talk about, you know, like boating as an outdoor activity that we should contemplate more? Is there,
I
like
think, a, I think the ACA has tried to position themselves as that.
Yeah.
Whether they pulled it off or not is debatable, but yeah. I think they've at least tried to position themselves there.
I think in our sport, the community is still so small that it relies on basically influencers of the sport to start this type of conversation and to carry it. So, like, you know, the pro kayakers that have the most social status are the ones who would have the most impact on the paddling community. And then in, you know, rafting, there's certain people that the rafting community looks up to, but then there's also outfitting companies, there's where you buy your raft from, like Air or Sotar, if they start talking about safety stuff. I think it just comes from multiple points of influence, but in my experience with hard shell boating, it seems like where the most change would be instigated would be from the most popular, visible pro kayakers having that type of a conversation and also just talking about what it means to them and kind of like, how did they get as good as they are? And I've really enjoyed reading some of the like op-eds and articles from pro kayakers talking about what they had to overcome and like how hard they had to train and how hard they have to keep training to be at the level of performance that they're at. And it makes the perspective of kayaking seem like, oh man, these people don't just like wake up in the morning and huck class 5+ rapids. They're working, you know, their entire life to get to this point, and they're maintaining this level of performance, which is really, really hard to do.
Where do you read an op-ed like that? Is this a blog or is it an American Outdoor Journal? Where would these
so articles kayak, be? Like, Kayak Session has a few articles here and there. And REI just published something that Noria wrote about fear and kayaking. And then there's, you know, Doug Ammons, his short narratives online kind of cover that as well. And let's see. Ben Stokesberry, I think, has written a little bit about just like group dynamics and decision making. And then there was a podcast about him and Chris's recent trip where there are some group dynamic things and some performance issues that they kind of deep dove talked about. So it's just kind of like here and there, and I just see it pop up, or someone will send me an article and be like, oh, this was interesting. What did you think? So there's not like a single source, but yeah, wish I had a better answer. If there was just basically a stream of this type of information coming through on social media channels or whatnot, but
I guess I'm just asking, like, if you're a listener out there wondering, like, how do I get involved and like learn about more professionalism on the river or just being a safer boater? What's the source? Is it just play on Facebook and join a bunch of groups? Is it a certain magazine? Do I join the ACA?
Oh, and American Whitewater. Sorry, obviously. Yeah. The American Whitewater Journal often has those types of stories. And then you can look on their database for, it's a sad thing to read, but their accident like log. They'll talk about close calls and fatalities and go into as much detail as they can. And I think that reading those helps gain understanding of, you know, the cost of mistakes on the river and make you think about things critically as well. So American Whitewater is a good place. Kayak Session is a good place. And then any of the, you know, influential paddlers that you like, often just following them on social media, they'll sometimes share or put out stories. NRS is another good one. They have like their duct tape diaries blog, and some other places where paddlers will post stories. So yeah, those are the top of mind that I can think of right now on the spot.
I was actually going to say, I think, you know, in the avalanche community, some of the companies specifically have taken, you know, leadership roles on both like themselves doing it and funding some of that stuff being done for these conversations to happen. I think Black Diamond's done a really good job of taking kind of a leadership role there. I mean, granted, they sell avalanche awareness, or they sell like avalanche equipment. So, you know, they have sort of a financial investment there, but they've done a good job of being a leader. And in our community, I was trying to think of companies that have done that or could. And I think NRS has actually done a really good job of trying to do that. They've put together all sorts of different web series over the years. Some of them really good on, you know, things about safety and things about, like, you know, just taking leadership on that. And, you know, if you saw NRS and Cocotat and Jackson and some of, like, some of the main companies in the industry could come together or individually really make this a thing they wanted to dive into. And I think that would be really good for the industry.
Yeah, agreed.
And just so I can wrap this one up, is what is the thing that would be good to do is have like an anti-beatering campaign? Or is it like, or is anti-beatering the same thing as saying, let's promote more like good boating and being safe?
Yeah.
And good decision-making, not just good boating, good decision-making. And let's talk about what leads to bad decision-making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I think
what
like
what's impacting the way that you're thinking about what you're about to do, and make like raise awareness of those kinds of things. Cause the more people are aware of how the group dynamics are impacting the decisions they make, the more they're going to hopefully make good decisions.
Yeah.
Or question, you know, like, am I making a bad decision because I'm with a group of five people who I don't want to look like the worst of,
you know? Yeah, I totally agree. And I think with your question, Zach, having an anti-beatering campaign, I don't think that would really be effective. But I think, like Eric was saying, just having a more, I don't know what the right word is, but a broader explanation of like what kayaking is and what mistakes can turn into, how to prevent them, like those sorts of things would be probably be better for the community. So like, you know, instead of glorifying the reel where you swim and drink your booty, show the whole story and don't forget the part where you were really scared when you pulled your skirt and when your friends had to like throw a rope to get you out of the hole and pick up all your gear, because that's really the more important part of the story. And then also what led you to making that decision where you were in that position in the first place, and what can you do to prevent it in the future. So I think it's holistic is what I was looking at. Yeah. Need to have a more holistic view on mistake making, prevention, and decision making in the sport, I think, for it to be improved.
Cool. Well, let's real quick move on to our second topic. I don't know there's a whole lot to talk about here, but I have been seeing it go around is, you know, as river surfing has become more and more and more popular, I think with the development of like whitewater parks, but then also you see it out more and more on just, you know, your rivers, natural features. One of the things that has come along with that is you're getting people who come from a surfing background and not a boating background, is we're seeing more and more people that aren't wearing PFDs when they're out doing it. And there was an interesting post floating around the Facebooks, you know, a couple days ago about someone who was a, you know, river surfer and whitewater kayaker talking about how frustrated they were because more and more of these people surfing aren't wearing PFDs. And one of their arguments was, what if I hit my head, knock myself unconscious, and now you have to come try and rescue me and you're not wearing a PFD? Like, you're not any help to me. And then also, what if like you get into trouble, you're not wearing a PFD and I have to go rescue you? Now I'm in danger because you're not wearing a PFD. I thought it was an interesting argument, and would be curious what your thoughts are.
Well, I don't think any of us are going to say like, don't wear a PFD. I think that from our backgrounds on whitewater, we're all going to say it's really important. So I think my thought is like, people should wear a PFD on rivers. It's pretty straightforward. I just know there's a ton of people who come from a surfing background in the ocean, and they go to these whitewater parks or these surfing spots, and that's just not part of the culture. And so do we force our river culture on them? I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, I think something that I haven't seen, at least personally in these conversations, is the difference between ocean surfing and river surfing. For one, salt water is more buoyant than freshwater. You're usually wearing a wetsuit, which has some additional buoyancy, and ocean waves behave entirely differently than river waves. and so there's, and also the other part is big wave surfers do wear PFDs a lot of the time now. Like, they've realized that that's something that is important to them surviving these larger features. And when you're in a river, like if you fall off an ocean wave, when you fall off of a river wave, you're going to keep going downstream. And if there's features downstream, you're probably going to want something to help you stay above the water. So it's not like, I don't know, for me, it's not as simple as saying, well, in the ocean, I don't need to wear a PFD, or when I'm surfing these breaks wherever in the ocean, like I don't need it, then I don't need it on the river. Because they're two different environments.
Like the argument in the ocean, I can understand the argument of like, you want to dive under waves and all that kind of
right.
stuff. And also, the river argument, it seems like the primary river argument is that it just is really hard to lay on your board and paddle with a PFD on.
Yeah. And I guess my
And my you don't get a very good tan. It definitely
right,
affects your tan.
It doesn't look cool. It messes up with that.
Yeah.
So my argument with the laying on your board is, yeah, it is tough, but there are a lot of low profile PFDs that exist. And you can also, like, if you're really that worried about it, you can buy the PFDs that surfers wear on big waves that are extremely low profile and like built into your wetsuit. You can even have some like that. So, there are options that make it easier to lay on your board. And sure, it's not as great as laying on your board with just a wetsuit or with nothing, but that's kind of a silly argument, I guess, at least how I see it.
I mean, are we basically talking about subsurfing? Is that where we're at? This is just subsurfing, right?
Well, no, there's like surfboard surfing on rivers now, too.
Big time.
Yeah.
Which is, okay, standing up on boards.
I think that's become more popular than actually like sup surfing.
So we're talking about boards, standing up on them, and surfing waves and rivers. That's what it comes down to. And I would guess that pretty much everybody who listens to our podcast is a whitewater person, and they would be like, yeah, wear a PFD. That's a no-brainer. I think there's a whole different culture of people who stand up on boards and surf waves who I don't know how we get through to them, but I think that's who needs to hear this, right? I would guess that pretty much everybody who listens to this agrees that you should wear a PFD.
Yeah. I think it also depends on...
water parks and yelling at people. Is that what we should do?
Yeah. Megaphones.
Jeez. I mean, this brings up another quick aside. I won't take over this discussion of this aside, but like I regularly see things that are sketchy on rivers. Is it my job to say something?
No, it's your job to take a photo and put it on Instagram.
We already discussed this.
Maybe. But like, that's the thing. Is like, whose job is it to go to these whitewater parks and surf waves and be like, hey guys, like, who wants to be the fuddy-duddy? You know, and is it that important to have a PFD patrol out there?
I mean, I'm not going to say anything to anyone unless I'm having to like rescue them or like they've basically made it to where I have to interact with them for their decision or whatever. But I don't know.
And when I think about yelling at surfers, I think of that scene in Point Break where Keanu Reeves gets in a fight with the surfers. I think it was the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Yeah. I'm going to be the guy who's like walking back to my car and they surround me and they beat me up.
Probably. So another thing I thought of, though, and this is just a totally personal opinion as someone who does not do river surfing, is I think in like some whitewater parks where it's just a feature and then it ends in like a pool that's barely moving, like personally, I probably wouldn't feel like I need to wear a PFD. So I think it depends on, are you doing like downriver river surfing Are there features downstream? Like, I know Skookumchuck, like, there's some big features downstream if you fall off the wave. So people generally always wear PFDs if they're surfing on a board. But, like, if I'm just at a whitewater park, say, like, in Bend at the very last wave and surfing, which ends in a pool that's, like, barely moving, I probably wouldn't feel – and it's shallow. Like, I probably wouldn't feel that compelled to have to wear a PFD in that scenario. Not saying it's right or wrong, but I just wouldn't be like, oh, I definitely need a PFD.
I think that's the problem, is that it's like – when you do the Rogue and you've done it 50 times that summer, do you feel compelled to wear a PFD?
Yeah. Get tired when I'm swimming.
Yeah. Or like, let's say you guide class two all summer. You're like, well, I don't really need a PFD. It's a slippery slope. Like, as soon as you start not wearing it at one point, then that creeps into other parts of your life. So I think as soon as you're not wearing a PFD surfing, like the Bend Whitewater Park is a classic example. It's just a surf wave and you can just swim. Right, and swim to shore. There's tons of people there. Surfers don't wear PFDs. As soon as it becomes a culture there, it grabs on. I think it's kind of, I think the point of this discussion is, should it just be a good practice to always wear PFDs?
Yeah. I mean, I think as a general rule, yes, but I would always advocate that people critically think about things, because I think that's one of the problems in our sport, is people just monkey see, monkey do all the time. And they don't think of like what their environment is and why they're making the decisions they are. But generally, yes, you should always wear appropriate safety equipment. But, you know, there's times when, like, if I'm just with my friends and like surfing or whatever, a little wave, I maybe wouldn't wear a PFD, but if I know that I'm setting an example for others, I probably would wear it for that reason, I guess, is how I would sum it up.
Well, I mean, Priscilla, you are always setting an example for others because you're Priscilla.
Not if I'm by myself.
So you're saying when you're by yourself subsurfing, you won't wear a PFD?
Well, I don't subsurf, but okay. Yeah, this is all hypothetical.
So I don't know. I just think that like we should always wear a PFD. And as soon as we break that rule for anything, it's a slippery slope, and it changes the example for others. Then other people monkey see, monkey do, and everybody's not wearing a PFD. If the guy that's going to beat me up is wearing a PFD, everybody will start wearing a PFD. And so it kind of depends on the leaders out there. And those leaders are surfers. They're not whitewater people.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that the slippery slope piece is right, because I used to boat a lot without a PFD. Like, if I was rafting or running a drift boat or whatever, it's like, I don't need a PFD of class two. And I backtrack now. Pretty much if I'm in my boat, I'm wearing a PFD all the time.
Yeah.
I saw that video of you wearing jeans and a PFD on your sweet boat.
Yeah.
I had a good laugh. Zach boating in jeans. That was pretty fun.
That's awesome.
I mean, I love jeans. They're comfortable. They're durable.
Especially when they're wet.
Well, I mean, but I had a PFD, so I'd still float. At least I'm wearing a PFD. But again, you too, you're setting an example, Eric. Like, people know you in the community. So if you're out on the Riggins Days, I don't know how hard Riggins Days stretch is. I'm guessing at low water right now, it's like class two. But if you're out there not wearing a PFD, that sends a message to the community and your employees. And they start not doing it. Or if they see you wearing one on like class one water, that sends a different message. Like, even though you don't need one, you still see the value in wearing one.
Yeah. I wear it basically all the time now. And you know, I think part of that too is having kids and them asking like, why aren't you wearing your life jacket? It's like, oh yeah, crap, you're right. But I think that was part of it for me too, was once I had the kids, it was like, even on class two, like, let's just say the impossible happens, you know, or I snap an oar or something like that. And something just totally weird happens. I can't help them if I'm having to take care of myself. And that really pushed me to wear my life jacket all the time. And now once I got into that kind of mindset, I'm just in a boat and I wear it. Now I wonder why the hell I didn't wear it before. You know, like, what, it's such an easy thing to put on. It's comfortable. If you have a good one, you got lots of pockets, you know, like, it just seems like a dud to me, but anyway, We should probably move to our gear of the week.
Yeah.
Gear of the week, Zach?
Gear of the summer? I can start. I was going to talk about my new raft, but I'll wait till later. Because I got some of those. What are those dorky looking shoes that everybody has? What are those called again? Crocs. I got some Crocs. And I used to make fun of them, and I didn't understand the value of them. Everyone always does
until they own one.
And then exactly. I tried some on this summer on a That's how I was that person, and somebody carried them into the two of our guides carried them into the Chetco, and they had them in camp, and I was just super jealous the whole trip. And
best so camp
shoe. Great camp shoe. And I get home, I'm like, well, I'll order a pair, I'll try them out. And I love them. They're super simple and comfortable and whatever. So, I don't know. For all you Crocs haters, give them a chance. They're pretty cool.
Agreed.
Any gear?
Yeah, so I guess also shoes. So the old Astral Wrestlers have had a lot of issues because the stitching is like on the outside of the shoe. So when it gets wet and you get abrasion for whatever reason from hiking or just being in your boat, it separates the sole from the rest of the shoe. But in their new version, which came out somewhat recently, they've enclosed the stitching inside of the sole. So it seems to have eliminated that problem. And Jacob's had his for a few months and hasn't had any issues. And I just got my new warranty pair and I'm excited to try them out because I really love the rubber. I just was not very happy that I was always having to repair the stitching on the shoe. So hopefully these ones last a little longer.
Cool. Yeah. I got a new pair of them too. I haven't worn them that much to wear them out, but I'm glad to hear they're better.
Cool. Well, since we're talking about footwear, I talked about Bedrocks a lot before. I actually wore them like a ton this summer on river trips, like used them for full river trips. And I was pretty mixed going into the summer on them. I didn't use them a ton and thought they were pretty uncomfortable. Having now used them like on numerous multi-day river trips, I'm 100% sold. Like you have to break them in and kind of soften up the materials and get them fit right. But once you do, they're rad. So
nice.
I'm super into the Bedrock scene for a guide, like summertime guide footwear. They're rad. Another thing is we got to demo a couple Star boats this summer from NRS, and we demoed one of their paddle cats and I think their 15-foot, you know, raft with a drop stitch floor. And the raft I thought was, for the price point, is pretty cool deal. You know, it's not going to live up to long-term commercial use, and there's some performance pieces. Like if I was looking at that or, you know, a Sotar ST or an Air Double D or something like that, like I would go the other route. But for the money, it seems like a pretty cool deal at the price point that it's at. The floor is a little weird. It seems like maybe they're using the same floor for the 14 and the 15. The floor felt a little small. But again, for the price, it was cool. We had their paddle cat, and I have some bigger concerns about the paddle cat, but that may be, it's the only paddle cat I've ever paddled, so it may just be paddle cats in general. It may not
be
that one.
Is the paddle cat the two-person shredder thing that they make?
They make a bigger and a smaller version. One's like an 11 and one's a 12 and a half or something. Yeah. We had the bigger one.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if they may all suck or it may just been that one. I'm not really sure because it's the only one I've ever paddled.
So before NRS bought Star, their paddle cat was awesome. And NRS changed it, and I hear it's not as good. Used the one before NRS bought them, and I love that boat.
I was ready to be out of the boat and not get back.
Wait, so here's what I'm hearing, Eric. I'm hearing, let me just try to rephrase this. Star makes some mediocre boats, but they're cheap.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I would say we used it this summer. So like one summer's worth of commercial type use, and it held up totally fine. Like we've had zero problems with the raft. Does it track as well as some of the other boats on the market? Probably not. But
Eric, you know, if you're looking
to get into a boat at a cheaper price point, it is a perfectly good one to look at.
It's you're like, basically
if you don't want to drop $7,000 on a boat, but you do want to get into rafting, don't rule this one out just because it's cheap. That's what I'm saying. Like it's
you're saying it's adequate. Like Star is making an NRS is making an adequate boat, but it's cheap.
It is affordable, yes.
Okay.
And it seems like it's going to hold up well to like private use without any problems. So, again, if you're into boating enough that you want to spend $7,000 on a raft, then like I would look other places for sure. But you know, if you're looking for that entry level boat, you want to get your first raft so you can get out on the river and start doing the thing. It's definitely one you should look at.
Nice. Cool.
So that's, that was my gear of the week. Anything else?
I could talk about this cheap raft thing for an hour, but I won't.
We'll do it another time. Yeah. We'll even make that a topic down the road is the cheap raft comparison. Cause I think there's what you got Star NRS is kind of like their actual brand boats are a little above that probably.
Yeah.
Tributary, Rocky Mountain.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a fun one. We could do some discussions on our experiences with the entry-level raft market.
I think those are the three. The Tributary, the Rocky Mountain, and the Star would be the three to compare.
Yeah, I think so. So maybe down the road. That sounds like a fun conversation. Like get ourselves in trouble.
I think we would get a lot of trouble.
That might be worth it, though.
Which boat is the best mediocre raft? That would be the discussion.
We have to have that conversation for sure.
Okay.
I'm super into that conversation. All right. Well, check back next time for what might be a fun conversation on what's a good entry-level raft. That was it for today. So thanks you guys for getting on and thanks for listening. Hopefully you're finding water somewhere, although it's September, so I doubt it. But get out, go to Featherfest. It's coming up. And back again, we'll be doing these more often. Gonna float me.